I said, guys, we don't do this anymore. And we actually begin to laugh and call these the female elements. That you do not force these elements to do anything they don't want to do. Anyway, this is out of Scientific American, October 1991. This is the spectra of superdeformed nuclei. Now, they use an example of mercury 192 and mercury 194, which are both radioactive isotopes. So, you know, you say, well, it doesn't mean anything. But I just showed you papers that said ruthenium, rhodium, palladium, and silver, osmium, iridium, platinum, gold, and mercury will do this. So everything you're reading here applies to those. So, what does it say? Researchers at the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory have been finding that rapidly spinning nuclei with different masses have similar, if not exactly the same, moments of inertia. Something's going on, says Frank S. Stevens, a physicist at the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, and for reasons we don't understand yet. Now, this is really something, people, to get an American physicist that doesn't understand something. They'll never admit they don't understand something. Anyway, a spinning nucleus results from an off-center collision between two nuclei that's used to form a rapidly spinning elongated body. Well, that's the way they do it, but Mother Nature has done it already millions of years ago in the belly of the Earth. The deformed nucleus can take the shape of an American football, a doorknob, or possibly even a banana, depending on the collision energy in the nuclei. And a typically deformed nucleus, the long axis exceeds the two short axis by a factor of 1.3 to 1. Nuclei whose long axis is about twice that of its short ones are called superdeformed. It is in these superdeformed nuclei that curious goings-on have taken place. A spinning, superdeformed nucleus slows down a discrete step, each time emitting gamma rays. So, if you take this form of the element and you put it under high energy and you say, I'm going to make these things go back to low spin state, you either get gamma rays, which you don't want to be around, or it fissions, which you don't want to be around. You got Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or you got deadly gamma emission. Either choice is no good. So I want you to see this, because here's the Scientific American telling you exactly what I said was going on, that this was serious stuff. If you work with this very long, you're going to end up either becoming very sick, you're going to start having deformed babies. This isn't the kind of stuff you want to work around. This is real serious material. It's also why when the patent office got involved with me, they just said, Dave, we want you to tell us everything you know. We're not going to let you go to patent pending here in the U.S. until you literally take gold and make the white powder out of it. And so I went to Argonne National Laboratories. They tried to get it approved by their attorneys, because I said, you have to make the white powder of gold from gold, or else you won't know it's gold. If I bring you white powder, you don't know it's gold. You've got to make it from gold, the only way you know it's gold. But their attorney said, that's chemistry, and you don't need to do chemistry. You can go to any lab and do chemistry. So I asked Roger Popel, the head of ceramics and superconductivity at Argonne National Labs. I said, Roger, I need you to make it, though. And so Roger said, Dave, why don't you go to Mike McNallan and Steve Danilek, who are personal friends of mine. They have a lab here in Chicago. Have them make the white powder gold for you. Sign the affidavits for the patent office, and I will receive that as gold if they tell me they made it from gold. Now, Mike McNallan is an MIT metallurgical chemist. Okay, he's got the excellent credentials. I faxed him the procedures. He bought yellow gold, 99.99 pure gold, and he made the white powder of gold. After he made the white powder of gold, he sent it for analysis. It analyzed to be silicon aluminum. And what he wrote in his affidavit is, I don't know what the heck's going on here, but I know that I only have gold here. I have no explanation for why it analyzes not to be gold. However, every property is as described by Mr. Hudson, and I made it for pure gold, therefore I assume it's gold. And so that's the affidavit he signed for the patent office. Well, they claimed I could go to patent pending if I delivered that. Then after they got that, they said, well, we changed our mind. Now we want you to take the white powder gold back to yellow gold. Now understand, people, this was a materials patent. It was not a procedural patent. It was a materials patent. I was patenting these elements in this state. I said, I showed you how to take apples and make applesauce. And now you want me to take the applesauce back to an apple. Now that's pretty tough. Just take some applesauce. I want to see you make the apple. But believe it or not, I worked 3 years. I do know how to do that now. But when you understand what this stuff is, when you understand this is a way of producing gamma-level energy with a DC arc from a non-radioactive material, do you realize the firing weapons you can make for Star Wars? Do you realize the lasers that could be built with this that shoot right through anything and kill everybody in the building and never hurt the building? And this is really a serious weapon, and you don't need Gaddafi or Hussein playing with this stuff. Okay? So I decided I didn't think the Department of Defense needed it. Anyway, in 1993, I quit pursuing the patents. So anybody who says, well, I'm trying to find your patent, I can't find it, Dave. In 1993, I quit pursuing the patent. If you don't continue to pump money into them every year, you don't get to continue the patent. So even though I was issued 9 countries worldwide, I'm no longer pursuing those patents. Under advice of an attorney, he said, Dave, they can never grant a patent to anyone else that will ever apply to you. And so other people can use it, but you never have a patent enforced against you because you've applied for it and been turned down. That's all I ever wanted anyway. Okay? And they said, Dave, if you go on and if you're worried about them coming in and filing a nuclear patent, all you have to do is show that you've talked publicly to people about it, and it's in the public domain, and then they never can enforce that against you. So you've got to figure out what I'm talking to you, aren't you? There's a method to my madness. We got a videotape. There's a date on the tape. You all are my witnesses, so I may subpoena every one of you. Anyway, let's go to the next slide. You liked that, didn't you? Okay. Why is everybody so interested? This is actually a college textbook on nuclear magnetic resonance spectrometry published in 1963-64. People working with nuclear magnetic resonance in the 50s and 60s learned a whole lot of things about the nuclear moment of the nucleus. They found that with the application of 600,000-700,000 gauss to a nucleus, they can actually squish the nucleus so hard together that it spin flips to the high spin state. They can actually physically deform it with a magnetic field. And then they release that field, they read the resonance as it comes back down. Well, one of the things they learned is right here. This is talking about the relaxation phenomenon. It says there is another effect called spin-spin or transverse relaxation operative in solid. This involves transfer of energy from one high-energy nucleus to another. There is no net loss of energy. And that's the key, people. That's why everybody in the world is working on this. Because they know that high-spin atoms, theoretically, should be superconductors. They should be like hot potato. They pass energy from one high-spin atom to the next with no net loss of energy. And they know this. And see, if you can find a whole bunch of atoms that will stay in the high-spin state without the application of hundreds of thousands of Gauss field, which is enough energy to push electricity all the way across the country anyway, so it's kind of esoteric. But if you got atoms that will stay in the high-spin state with no external magnetic field, then theoretically, you can have a superconductor. Okay? So that's why everybody's so interested in this. Why they don't say that in their papers? Why don't they just come out and admit what they're working on this for? They just don't tell us. Anyway, let's go to the next slide. This is Physical Review C, Volume 41, Number 4, April 1990. Once again, the good old Niels Bohr Institute and the University of Milano in Italy. Anyway, what they're talking about here is the normal and superdeformed nuclei. Keyword here, superdeformed nuclei. And on down here, we're finally going to admit why they're interested in this. It has been conjectured that the usual Cooper instabilities, what do I mean by Cooper instability? The Cooper pair. Bardeen, Cooper, Schreifer, the BCS theory of superconductivity, the Cooper pair. that the usual Cooper instability will not exist anymore in small particles containing a reduced number of fermions, like e.g. metallic particles. Therefore, superconductivity should disappear for particles in the quantum size effect, or regime, when the energy difference between two discrete one-electron states is comparable to the energy gap of the superconducting state. This means the small superconductor with fewer than about 10 to the 4th to 10 to the 5th electrons, as well as e.g. atomic nuclei, should be strongly affected by quantum size effects. Now, what's that say? Big mouthful of words. The reason why I had to file patents on the state of matter in the high spin state, which is one patent, then I had to file another set of patents on the resonance-coupled system of quantum oscillators resonating in two dimensions. So I filed on gold, and I filed on S forms of gold. I filed on platinum, but I filed on S forms of platinum, which is actually the mini-atom system. In other words, the word superconductor is like the word army. You can't have a one-man army. You have to have many men to have an army. The word superconductor is a mini-atom phenomenon. It's not a one-atom phenomenon. Okay? That's why I have two patent applications. How many atoms? They theorize somewhere around 10 to the 4th to 10 to the 5th electron. So that's quite a few atoms. Now you understand why, if the government labs are making these atoms at one atom at a time, every day or so, and they need 10 to the 4th to 10 to the 5th electron, there's probably 3 to 4 electrons per atom that can go into Cooper pairs, then that means they're going to be quite a few years before they get enough atoms to measure and see if they got a superconductor or not. But they're working on it. They'll be there. Okay, let's go to the next slide. And here's the standard theory of superconductivity. This is Physical Review Letters, Volume 62, February 7, 1989, number 9. Bound states, Cooper pairing, both condensate in two dimensions. Standard theory of superconductivity. A bound state, remember the stuff, resonance coupled in a bound state, Cooper pairs, both condensate in two dimensions. That's exactly what our stuff does. It binds itself in a Coulomb wave as it bosons, phase connects because the Meissner fields touch, and so it's a quantum system resonating in two dimensions. Okay, go to the next slide. I belong to the International Precious Metal Conference. It was set up by Jonathan Matthew Engelhart. They publish this publication quarterly. It's called the Platinum Metals Review. In the Platinum Metals Review, they have articles about the uses for the precious elements, whether it be platinum, palladium, ruthenium, osmium, gold. You know, all these are in the same publication. They have a section on electrical aspects. They have another one on thermocouples and temperature measurement. They have another section called medical uses. In every quarterly publication, there's probably 30 to 40 articles on the use of platinum metals as anti-cancer or anti-tumoral uses. For those of you who don't know, they use cisplatin and carbonoplatinum as testicular and ovarian cancers. Now, other than it makes you very ill, it actually gets rid of the cancer. So what we want to know is, why does it get rid of the cancer? And what we find up here is that the modification of DNA by cisplatin has been examined. Anti-tumoral active platinum compounds induced in DNA at low levels of binding. Local conformational alterations have the character of non-denaturing distortions. In other words, if the DNA is altered, you put the platinum compound near it, it resonates with the cell, causing the DNA to relax and to become corrected. Okay, that's the cure for cancer. It doesn't bombard you with radiation until it literally kills other tissue around it, hoping to encapsulate the cancer in scar tissue. It doesn't kill your immune system with chemotherapy, you know, depleting your body and hoping to get it that way, which usually doesn't work. It doesn't amputate a section that contains the cancer and remove it from your body. It actually corrects the cell, which is kind of neat. I mean, that's actually a cure, people. Let's go to the next slide. Here is from Scientific American, May 1995. This is a more recent article, and most people wouldn't pay attention to it, but right here I'd like to point out that researchers examined the electrical properties of short lengths of double helix DNA in which there was a ruthenium atom. Well, if there's a single atom, it's in the high spin state. Now, they don't know this, but it's there. At each end of one of the strands, Mead and Kayam estimated from earlier studies that a short single strand of DNA ought to conduct up to 100 electrons a second, Imagine their astonishment when they measured the rate of flow along the ruthenium doped double helix. The current was up by a factor of over 10,000 times, over a million electrons a second. They have no explanation for this, people. They just put one ruthenium atom at both ends of the DNA and it's 10,000 times more conductive. Blew their mind. What they don't understand is it's not really conducting electricity. It's a resonance-coupled system of quantum oscillators resonating in two dimensions, or a superconductor. So the atoms are actually resonance-coupled in the other one's wave, and they're superconducting, but it has nothing to do with electricity. But they're measuring the Meissner field around it, assuming it's electrical field, and saying, gee, it's this much, wow. Well, it's not. It's superconductivity. Okay? So I know a guy that contacted the researcher, and he told him about what we'd done. And he says, that's what it is, it's superconductivity. And the guy says, nah. And about 5 minutes later, he says, you think so? And about another 5 minutes, he says, you know, maybe you're right. He scratched his head. So he's aware of our work now, and you'll see, before long, you get some more publications out. We'll find out what really is going on. Volume 85A, number 6 and 7, Physics Letters, October 12, 1981. Nonlinear properties of coherent electric vibrations in living cells. It is shown that the coherent electrical longitudinal vibrations predicted by Frohlich and experimentally detected by Webb in living cells actually obey nonlinear optical laws. These vibrations might form a network of filaments inside cells. And it talks about Bose-like condensations. And the Bose-like condensation in an area actually flowing light between the cells. Let's go to the next reference. Here is Physiological Chemistry and Physics, 1973, Biological Sensitivity to Weak Magnetic Fields Due to Biologically Superconducting Josephson Junctions. The author, Freeman Cope, the Biochemistry Laboratory, U.S. Naval Air Development Center. Okay, this is your tax dollars now. Various species of organisms can detect weak magnetic fields from 0.1 to 5 Gauss. Indirect evidence suggests that electron tunneling may occur across junctions between superconducting microregions and living systems. Josephson junctions and living systems may provide a physical mechanism with more than enough sensitivity to explain the observed responses of organisms to weak magnetic fields. Biological sensitivity to weak magnetic fields, 0.1 to 5 Gauss, is well established experimentally in various species of amoeba, flies, bees, beetles, snails, birds, and possibly man. They actually know that the way the cells communicate with each other is by a superconducting phenomenon. They've actually measured it. They know what's going on in the body. Let's go to the next slide. Physiological Chemistry and Physics 3, number 71, evidence from activation energy for superconductive tunneling in biological systems at physiological temperatures. Once again, the Biochemistry Laboratory, U.S. Naval Air Development Center. For several biological systems involving nerve or growth processes, the square of the activation energy is a linear function of temperature over a moderate range of physiological temperatures, and this involves single electron tunnelings between microregions of superconductivity. And the last slide. Physica Scripta, Volume 40, page 786 to 791, 1989. Magnetic flux quantization in Joseph behavior in living systems. The proposal of coherent electromagnetic processes as the engine for biological dynamics suggests that Josephson effect could be present in living cells. Positive experimental evidence is reported and discussed. What you got to see here, people, is they know it's in your body. They know that that's the way the cells communicate with each other. They know that it's the electrons condensed into a bosonic system of light. They know that that's the way cells communicate with each other. They just can't figure out how it's doing it. It must be some stealth-like atom because they can't see it. Well, it is. That's exactly what it is. When we took brain tissue and nerve tissue and we did a destruction of the organic material and a metals analysis on the elements that were in there, we found over 5% by dry matter weight of the brain and nervous tissue was made up of rhodium and iridium in the high spin state. 5%. Now, this is more rhodium and iridium than supposedly all the elements that you have in your brain. or all the metals that you're supposed to have in your brain. Here's more rhodium and iridium than all the metals are supposed to be in there. And nobody knows it because they're like stealth atoms. Everybody's calling them carbon because they have no absorption emission spectra, so they assume they're carbon, and they're not carbon. Superconductors in the body. In other words, you've got a light body as well as a physical body. Okay, let's go to the next one.